Our reading is taken from Luke chapter 16, verses 1 to 14. Luke chapter 16, verse 1, and if you're using the Bibles in front of you, it's page 1054. Luke chapter 16, beginning at verse 1. Jesus also said to the disciples, "There was a rich man who had a manager, and charges were brought to him that this man was wasting his possessions. And he called him and said to him, 'What is this that I hear about you? Turn in the account of your management, for you can no longer be manager.' And the manager said to himself, 'What shall I do, since my master is taking the management away from me? I am not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. I have decided what to do, so that when I am removed from management, people may receive me into their houses.' So summoning his master's debtors, one by one, he said to the first, 'How much do you owe my master?' And he said, 100 measures of oil.' He said to him, 'Take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. And then he said to another, 'How much do you owe?' He said, 100 measures of wheat. He said to him, 'Take your bill and write 80. The master commended the dishonest manager for his shrewdness. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than the sons of light. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of unrighteous wealth, so that when it fails, they may receive you into the eternal dwellings. One who is faithful in very little is also faithful in much. And one who is dishonest in very little is also dishonest in much. If then you will not have been faithful in the unrighteous wealth, who will entrust to you the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in that which is another's, who will give you that which is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money." The Pharisees, who were lovers of money, heard all these things and they ridiculed him. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Nigel, thanks for bringing us that reading. You might want to keep that passage open in front of you. Let me pray before we begin. Our Father, thank you that you speak to us through your word. We pray that this morning you would please give us ears to hear and hearts to love what you say to us. Amen. Well, I wonder what you make of verses 10 to 12 as the lesson of the dishonest manager. One who is faithful in a very little is also faithful in much. And one who is dishonest in a very little is also dishonest in much. If then you have not been faithful with the unrighteous wealth, who will entrust to you the true riches? And if you have not been faithful with that which is another's, who will give you what is your own? At first glance, it's not obvious how that's what we learn from the dishonest manager. In what way does he show us how to be trustworthy? It's intriguing, isn't it? But actually, that's often the case with parables. Parables, you might know, are stories that Jesus told during his earthly ministry. Now, preachers quite often tell stories to illustrate something, to make it simpler or easier to understand. But parables are not like that. We shouldn't read parables and expect them to clarify things. In fact, in Luke chapter 8, where Jesus explains why he speaks in parables, he says this, "I speak in parables so that those seeing, they may not see, though hearing, they may not understand." Jesus speaks in parables to hide his message. That is, he speaks in parables to force us to listen carefully and to reflect on what he said. You see, parables require that we don't take God's word lightly. As Jesus summarizes in Luke 8, "Therefore consider carefully how you listen." So this morning, if we come to this parable and it seems to us that the parable and the lesson Jesus draws from it are at odds with one another, well, that is by design. That is Jesus's intent. You see, the point of the parable is to draw us into a story that's easy to understand, but whose meaning is a puzzle, so that Jesus can help us to see the world differently. And so 3 points as we dive into this parable this morning. A good steward is shrewd. A good steward has a healthy contempt for money. And so will you serve God or money? And so our first point, a good steward is shrewd. I think the story that Jesus tells us is easy enough to follow, isn't it? A rich man hears that his household steward has been wasting his possessions. And so he tells him to put accounts in order because he's going to be fired. And so the man, not wanting to resort to manual labor or begging, comes up with a scheme. He essentially defrauds his master, gives exceedingly generous terms to his master's debtors, and he does so that he can win their good favor so that once he has lost his job, he'll be welcomed into their homes. Maybe you could think about it a bit like a corrupt politician who awards a juicy contract to a company, and then after he resigns, suddenly finds himself with a job on their board. I think we understand this story all too well. The thing that jars in the story is the master's response. The master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. See, you think surely his master would have been furious with the way he was defrauded. Wouldn't you be in his position? The steward has been dishonest. Some commentators try to sort of explain away what the steward has done by saying that the manager has somehow done something righteous, that he's reduced interest payments that were too high, or something like that. But Jesus is clear. If we look at what he's done, we think, well, that looks dishonest. Well, then we've understood the parable correctly. He says the master commended the dishonest manager because he'd acted shrewdly. Now, I don't think the master's praise means that he's going to write the manager a good reference. I think it's perhaps more the way a chess player might say, well played, when he realizes his opponent has outmaneuvered him. Hats off to you. You got the better of me. You see, his actions are both dishonest, but at the same time also shrewd. That's what Jesus is telling us in verse 8. For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of the light. And then Jesus himself commends what the manager has done as something that the people of light need to learn from. Now, I think when we come to this parable, we mustn't be too quick to assume that we know who the people of light are, or the sons of light. You see, the genius of parables is that they draw us in. The way you respond to the manager basically determines who you are in this parable. If you're outraged at his dishonesty, well, then you're one of the sons of light. If you're impressed by his shrewdness, if you're thinking, oh, that's a clever scheme, well, then you're one of the sons of this world. In other words, if you find yourself scandalized by the manager's behavior, and I would put myself in that camp, then you and I are the very people Jesus says need to learn something from this manager. We are the sons of light. And we find ourselves lumped with the Pharisees in being the sons of light. Verse 14, they're also listening to what Jesus says. They're outraged at what Jesus says. And so what can we learn from the manager's scheme? What has he done that is praiseworthy? That's something that we should go away and emulate. Well, it's not his dishonesty that he's commended for, but his shrewdness. Or maybe to use a better word, his prudence. You see, to be prudent means to know the best way to achieve your goals. It means knowing the right means to achieve the ends that you're after. It means knowing the true value of things. So if I could use a slightly trivial example, I suppose if you know somebody whose goal is to stay healthy, and they do that by exercising and eating lots of vegetables, you could say, well, they're prudent. They're going about being healthy the right way. Or to see the point negatively, I think you could look at someone like Just Stop Oil. They're a group that are passionate about trying to convince people that we need to take radical action against climate change. But the way they do this is by engineering traffic jams that cause much frustration, that cause people to be delayed and to miss appointments. You see, their strategy is an excellent strategy if you want to annoy people. But I think I'd say to them, if you want to persuade people to support your cause, then what they're doing is self-defeating. It's a little bit like thinking bees are going to give you honey if you poke a beehive with a stick. And I think Just Stop Oil are perfect examples for us as we think about what it means to be a son of light. They're idealists, they have deeply held moral convictions, but they're not very shrewd. They need to learn prudence. And the manager in Jesus' parable is a lesson for us in prudence. You see, he recognized that his master's wealth was worthless to him. He couldn't take it with him, but he could use it. And so he spent that money to gain something valuable, to gain friends. And he has understood something profoundly true about the world. He's understood that money, like power, is worthless as an end in itself. Because we are not created for money or for power. I wonder if you've realized that. That money is only useful for gaining other things that are of real value. And we are created for relationship. As one theologian put it, the point of life is communication. We are made for relationship with God and with others. And so by spending his master's money, even dishonestly, towards that end, the manager has demonstrated profound wisdom. He's understood the true value of things. And that is what Jesus calls you and me, if we are like the sons of light, to learn from him. Verse 9, I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourselves, so that when it is gone, you'll be welcomed into eternal dwellings. And that is surprising, isn't it? A shrewd steward of money will use it until it is gone to make friends. You see, the purpose of money is to use it. And that means when you follow Jesus' reasoning, that our second point this morning is that a good steward has a healthy contempt for money. I think verse 9 is such an interesting summary to the parable of the shrewd manager. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of unrighteous wealth, so that when it fails, they may receive you into the eternal dwellings. In some ways, it's an awkward fit to the story. For example, where do eternal dwellings suddenly come from? The parable says, use wealth to gain friends, so that when it is gone, you'll be welcomed into their dwellings. How did that become eternal dwellings? And as we sort of wrestle with how this summary can fit with the parable we've just heard, I think it's helpful to recognize that actually it's the summary not just of this parable, but of all the parables that have come before it. And that means the parable of the prodigal son, which comes at the end of Luke chapter 15. That's quite a well-known parable. It's a parable Jesus tells about two sons, where one leaves home and takes his inheritance, squanders it all, and then returns home to the unexpected welcome of his father. And there's his older brother who stays home, who doesn't go away. Jesus tells that parable to the Pharisees who are listening in verse 14. And in fact, it's the same audience as at the start of chapter 15, where we're told the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear Jesus, but the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." Then Jesus told them this parable. Now, the general pattern with parables in Luke's gospel is that there's an occasion, there's something happening. Jesus tells a parable, and then he gives the moral of the story. So, for example, with the parable of the Good Samaritan, the occasion is a teacher of the law stands up to ask Jesus a question. Jesus tells the parable, and then the moral, go and do likewise. Well, here the occasion is the Pharisee grumbling that Jesus eats with tax collectors and sinners. And Jesus responds by telling four parables. Three in chapter 15, one at the start of chapter 16. And the point of all of them comes in chapter 16, verse 9. "I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourselves, so that when it is gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings." And once we notice that this parable is meant to go with chapter 15, we can start to see that there are other parallels between the parable of the shrewd manager and the parable of the prodigal son. You see the younger son in chapter 15, verse 13, and the manager in chapter 16, verse 1, are both accused of squandering or wasting wealth. Jesus used the same word. Not only that, but we're introduced to sons in the parable of the steward, aren't we? Verse 8, the sons of this world and the sons of light, or the sons of this age and the sons of light. And so the parable of the shrewd manager is clearly extending the teaching of the parable of the prodigal son, a parable that compared and contrasted two sons, one of this age, the younger son, and a son of light, the older son. You see, when we take all these parables together, they are a criticism of the Pharisees. The main point in chapter 15 is the Pharisees have not understood what God is like. He longs to welcome repentant sinners home. And chapter 16 adds that they have misunderstood money. And that's what the summary statement in verse 9 makes clear. "I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourselves, so that when it is gone, you'll be welcomed into eternal dwellings." You see, that does describe what the manager has done, hasn't it, to an extent? But can you see it also describes what the younger son does in the parable of the prodigal son? Didn't he spend all his money and when it was gone, discover the one thing that was truly valuable? A restored relationship with his father. Is he not the one who is welcomed into eternal dwellings? Now, there is a better way to use money than squandering it in wild living. That's why Jesus tells us the parable of the shrewd manager. But here's where I think Jesus' words really bite. You're better off imitating the younger son in every respect and squandering your money than being like the older son. You see, at the start of that parable, both brothers are actually the same. Both are after their father's money. That's what they really want. But by squandering and wasting his money, the younger son learns a healthy contempt for money He learns the limits of money. In the end, it's not money, but relationship. His relationship with his father, that saves him. But the older brother never learns that lesson. And at the end of the story, he's the one who's not yet entered into eternal dwellings, who still values money above relationships. Friends, you cannot be a trustworthy steward of money until you learn that lesson. In his wisdom and in his compassion, Jesus tells us a scandalous story of a dishonest manager to teach us that there is something worse than dishonesty, and that is serving the wrong master. Better to be a dishonest steward than one that faithfully loves and serves money. I think for us living today in an age that values sincerity and authenticity above everything, this is shocking. Because Jesus says being sincerely wrong is dangerous. Sincerity is no replacement for prudence. And that's the force of Jesus' words in verses 10 to 12, said in the context of the parable he's just told. The first requirement to be trustworthy with money is not that you're honest. It's that you value it rightly. And so a final point this morning, will you serve God or money? That question, again, actually takes us back to the previous parable, and this time to the older son. You see, you might ask yourself, what does he care about? Who does he serve? When his father goes out to beg him to come into the house to celebrate the return of his brother, he says this. He says, look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders, yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But that's just not true. His father doesn't care about his money. When his younger son asked for his money, he just gave it to him. No, the thing his father cares about above everything is his son. The thing his father most wanted was that his son who was lost come home. If the older brother had been serving his father, he would have been out scouring the country, spending every last cent to find his younger brother and bring him home. Now, he wasn't slaving for his father. He was serving money. He complains his father never even gave him a goat to celebrate with his friends. And what does his father say? My son, you're always with me, and everything I have is yours. It was all his anyway. He just didn't want to spend it. And so at the end of the story, he's still outside the house, unwilling to enter eternal dwellings, unwilling to eat with his brother, who he probably despises for having wasted his inheritance. And so here's a picture of what it looks like to love and serve money rather than God. Just a few chapters earlier in Luke chapter 12, a man said to Jesus, teacher, tell my brother to divide my inheritance with me. I don't think any of us find it difficult to understand why he asks that question. But maybe now we can start to see what's so wrong with it. Valuing wealth, valuing his inheritance above his relationship with his brother, well, that is truly foolish. The danger of greed, though, is that it is deceitful. You see, the older brother doesn't realize that he loves and serves money. He thinks he's working for his father. The Pharisees, we're told in verse 14, loved money, but they also seemed unaware of it. Greed is deceitful, and the sons of light are particularly vulnerable to that deception. Their idealism blinds them to reality. And greed is deadly. It destroys relationships and it puts us at odds with God. And that's where Jesus lands in verse 13. No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. In fact, what does God think about money? Verse 15, for what is exalted among men is an abomination in the sight of God. And so Jesus holds up the shrewd manager before us as an example of how to be responsible stewards of money. He's someone who sees wealth clearly. He gives money away for the sake of friendship. And that is the basic remedy that Jesus gives us in these parables. The way to escape the love of money is to give it away, to use it to serve better things. So there are many good uses you could find for your money. You could give it to the church. You could give it to support missionaries. You could give it to help persecuted Christians. You could give it to help those in need in our neighborhoods. The key thing is that you give it away. I know someone used to aim to always give away more money than he saved. Meant his savings were pretty terrible. But I wonder what Jesus would say to that strategy. Earlier this year, I was reading Tim Keller's Reflections on Proverbs, and he gives the advice to make a plan over the next 3 years to give away an increasing percentage of what you earn. Now, I don't know how hard that might be for you. I suppose it depends how much you already give away. But it sounds like prudent advice to me if what you want is to not love money, but love God instead. And of course, Jesus doesn't only teach us to serve God and not money. He shows us that too. In Luke chapter 4, a rich man, the devil, offers Jesus all the kingdoms of the world if he will just worship him. Jesus, will you worship God or money? And Jesus says, it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve him only. No one has ever accused Jesus of Nazareth of being a wealthy man in this life. It's because Jesus never pursued or served money. Now, he spent everything he had, every last drop, down to those few pitiful possessions that the soldiers gambled for at the foot of his cross to make friends. Not so that he could enter into eternal dwellings, that was never in question, but so that we could. Jesus Christ turned down all the wealth in the world over the joy of knowing you and me as his friends so that he could welcome us into his Father's house. And he calls us to have that same attitude. And so that's the question that we left with this morning. Will you be shrewd with what God has entrusted to you? And understand what it is useful for. Will you give away your money? Have a healthy contempt for it? Or will you love it instead? Who will you worship? No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Amen.